Morning, today's daf and Pesachim Yud Gimel. We are on Yud Beis Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're starting this morning, before the lines start getting wider. Tana Rabbanan, even a little bit before that. Yeah, no, we'll start from Tana Rabbanan. Okay, the Gemara yesterday took us through our ability to tell time. So we take ourselves back to a time where there were no watches, there were no clocks. And so how precise we were in terms of telling time, so we were okay. So long as the sun was out and we had an idea of where the sun was in the sky, so we had a pretty good sense of telling time. A margin of error, so as we learned yesterday, machlokus between Rami and Rabbi Yehuda, how much of a margin of error we're ready to extend people in terms of testifying in a court. You testify in a court and the first questions are going to ask you is when did it happen and where did it happen? And as we discussed yesterday, those are the Sheva Chakiros. You're going to answer, and you're going to answer in terms of when it happened and where it happened. Now, as far as when it happened, so it comes out to six questions in terms of establishing when it happened. But the last of the six questions is what hour of the day. So if the witnesses coordinate and corroborate in terms of what time it was during the day, so that's great. What if there's a discrepancy between them? So we saw yesterday machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. When all said and done, what comes out now, as Rava understood the machlokus, is that Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are giving a margin of error in terms of people's ability to tell time. And the question is whether or not there's a two-hour margin of error or a three-hour margin of error. Good. The Gemara also pointed out yesterday that there are certain things which are really, the margin of error shrinks. We're going to see this in just a moment. Right? One witness says it was before sunrise and the other witness says it was after sunrise. There's no room for error. There's no margin of error under those circumstances. We know. That can't be. They both can't be calling the same event, seeing the same event. When one witness says it happened in the morning, meaning the sun was in the eastern sky, and the other witness says no, the sun was in the western sky. Also, the margin of error goes ahead and significantly reduces because once again, it's easy to see where the sun is east versus west. With all that stated, so it brings us now to the Gemara's point, which we are about to also cross, and that's the following. We now go back to our discussion here in Chametz being Asar on Erev Pesach, Min HaTorat Chatzos. The Chachamim backed it up a little bit. How much did the Chachamim back it up? So we saw a machlokis in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. You go back to the Mishnah that we saw yesterday on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Rabbi Meir says that you can eat all the way up to and including the fifth hour of the day, which means that on a perfect day from 6 to 6, this is the way we've been expressing it now the last couple of days, on a perfect day from 6 to 6, so that fifth hour of the day is going to be from 10 to 11. So according to Rav Meir, you can eat up until 11 o'clock in the morning. You can eat chametz up until 11 o'clock in the morning. And for that last hour, you're not allowed to eat. That last hour, the Chachamim were concerned that we're going to confuse that last hour from 11 to 12, even though, again, it's pretty easy to discern. I say easy, by the way, I'm wearing a watch. But it's pretty easy to discern 11 o'clock from 12 o'clock. But as the sun starts to make its zenith in the sky, it's not so easy to tell. So therefore, the Chachamim gave a one-hour cushion where we are prohibited from eating chametz during that 1 hour. And on top of that also, it's during that last hour of the morning from 11 to 12 that we're going to be doing the mitzvah of Sreifa. That is the Shita of Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda says that we're going to be backing it up 2 hours. That means to say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, already at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there's going to be an Isser de Rabbanan to eat chametz. Good, and there's a third Shita in the Mishnah as well as Rami Gamliel. We are going to come back to Rami Gamliel in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, that machlok is between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So what is behind that Shita of Rav Yehuda? So presumably what's behind the Shita of Rav Yehuda is margin of error, meaning Rav Yehuda, who back in Sanhedrin we learned, has a significantly greater margin of error. So maybe that's the issue over here. However, the Gemara pointed out, yes, that's true. Rav Yehuda does have a larger margin of error, upwards of 3 hours. But nevertheless, we're talking about being able to discern between the morning versus the afternoon. The margin of error significantly reduces. So question was, and this is where we pretty much ended off yesterday, according to Rav Yehuda, so why does he have a two-hour cushion? Why do you have to stop eating chametz at 10 o'clock in the morning? And to that, the Gemara offered three answers. Answer number one, which was Abai's explanation. Abai explained it for his own viewpoint, but Abai is explaining this for Rav's viewpoint as well. And that is that when we're talking about Eidos and testimony, okay, people who are testifying, so they were very careful to see what they were looking at, the crime they were looking at. And so therefore, we extend for them a reduced margin of error. But when we're talking about the masses and everybody now having to be able to discern when is it 10 o'clock, when is it 11 o'clock, when is it noon, so over there, so for the masses, we're going to extend a larger cushion. That's one answer, the difference between Edim versus Chametz, which is usher to everybody. A second answer offered by Rav himself is that, well, Rav Yehuda says that you have to burn the Chametz, in other words, elimination, eradication of the Chametz can only be done al yedei Sreifa, and so therefore the Sreifa is going to be done at 11 a.m. You need an hour to collect the wood. That's why at 10 o'clock, stop eating Chametz, so you can focus on getting the wood. The Gemara happened not to have loved that answer of Rava. The Gemara did challenge that answer of Rava. And the third answer of the Gemara is that all this is very good when the sun is out. But what if it's a cloudy day? It's a cloudy Erev Pesach, so you no longer have the assistance of the sun. So once it's a cloudy day, so now we're in the blind. That's why the Chachamim backed it up 2 hours for fear of a cloudy day. The Gemara followed up. Well, if we're worried about a cloudy day, so then why have a cushion at 10 o'clock? Make the cushion 9 o'clock. Make it 8 o'clock. Meaning if it's a cloudy day and I can't see where the sun is, so maybe there should be no eating of chametz whatsoever. That's the Gemara's question, and the Gemara responded. And what was the Gemara's response? No, everybody knows 10 o'clock in the morning. How come everybody knows 10 o'clock in the morning? Because that's when we all eat breakfast. Or what they once upon a time called breakfast. Right? The breakfast back then was much later in the morning. Brunch, as we would call it. Whatever the case is. That's when everybody would eat. And since everybody would eat at 10, so everybody knows 10 o'clock. Okay. That's where the Gemara was. That's where we pick it up. I'll start from Ella Marava. Okay? Just a little bit earlier than that. So this now presents the third answer. So Ella Marava, Gzera Mishum Yom HaMa'unan, the concern is a cloudy day. Ihachi, the Gemara says, if that is in fact so, afilo bar b'shalos namilo necham. So don't eat chametz in the fourth hour. Meaning, so stop eating chametz even earlier. So amra papa dalitz mansuda lecholhi. No, because when it comes to the fourth hour is mansuda. Everybody knows it, and therefore, even on a cloudy day, we're all going to know it. It's interesting. The Gemara is basically saying that the culture is so strong that we eat a meal during the fourth hour of the day. So even on the cloudiest of days, even without the advantage of a sun, everybody knows when exactly it's going to be the fourth hour. Tosus points out over here, this answer the Gemara just provided, it's not an absolute answer because we're not going to use mealtime in order of helping out the Edim. So this idea that we're using mealtime to help people in terms of when to know what time in the morning it is, so it is a little bit limited. So says the last Tosus on our Amud. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Brisa Shar Rishona, Maicha Ludim. Here, a really interesting Brisa giving us the schedule of the first meal of the day. Parenthetically, by the way, the Gemara, Bizmana Gemara, they had 2 meals a day, right? We have 3 meals a day. Obviously, it's societal in terms of how many meals we have during a day. But in time of the Gemara, they had 2 meals during the day. So, Shar Rishona, so the first hour of the day. So this is like 6 to 7, right? Breakfast, what we would call it. So Maichal Ludim, that's when the Ludim would eat. Shnia, Maichal Listim, and the second hour of the day, that's when the robbers would eat. Okay, they would sit down together, right? Plan out their day. Anyway, Shlishi is Maichal Yorshim. Third hour of the day, so people who inherited a lot of money don't have to worry about work, so that's when they eat. Revi is Maichal Poalim. The fourth hour of the day is when the workers would eat. Chamish is Maichal Tamidei Chachamim. Fifth hour in the morning is when Tamidei Chachamim would eat. Shish is Maichal Kol Adam. And it's the sixth hour of the day where Maichal Kol Adam, that's what everyone would eat. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, that's confusing. Meaning select groups would be eating during the first through fifth hour of the morning, and then sixth hour, meaning from 11 to 12, that's Maichal Kol Adam, that just goes against what we just established. And the Gemara asks exactly that question. V'ha'amara papa reviz mansu'ud al-acholhi, didn't you just tell me that it's the fourth hour of the day, which is mansu'ud al-acol? So ela epoch. So the Gemara says, okay, the Brisa needs redacting. Reviz Maichal Kol Adam, chamish is Maichal Polalim, shish is Maichal Tamidei Chachamim. Fine, the fourth hour of the day is when everybody eats, and the fifth hour of the day is when the workers eat, and the sixth hour of the day are the Tamidei Chachamim. Mikan ve'elech kezorech even le'chemes. And then from that point going forward, it's like throwing a rock into a barrel. It's an expression, basically means, if you don't eat breakfast, right, breakfast, I know, it's cliche, but most important meal of the day, can't verify it, but people say it. But the Gemara says, however, that if you don't eat something at that point in time, anything you eat at that point in time, it's like throwing a stone into the barrel, meaning pointless. Amar Abaye lo, amar ella delo ta'amida b'tzafra. Abai just simply adds an addendum to this last point of the Braisa. Yes, it's true that eating after the sixth hour of the day, your first meal, is bad, but only if you didn't eat something in the morning. Aval tam midi b'tzafra. But let's say you had a little bite in the morning, so leisan ba. So then it's okay to push off your first main meal of the day. Anyway, what comes out from all this is that there is the general meal that is occurring during the fourth hour of the day, even on a cloudy day, even when we don't have the sun helping us in terms of identifying what time it is. Nevertheless, chametz can be eaten up to and including up to the fourth hour of the day, because we know when the fourth hour of the day is, even on a cloudy day. So Rav Ashi makes a statement which at this point in time, it's pretty obvious, which is, look, we had a machlokus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda as it relates to Eidos and Sanhedrin. That was all of yesterday's daf. And it coordinates with the machlokus that we have between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda vis-a-vis how much of a buffer the Chachamim added on Erev Pesach not to eat chametz. Chametz is asur midaraisa at noon. And now, how much of a cushion did the Chachamim put in? According to Rav Meir, 1 hour. According to Rav Yehuda, 2 hours. And the Gemara says that the two machlokus coordinate. Now, pshita hainu hach. So the Gemara says, all right, meaning, wasn't that the entirety of yesterday's daf? So the Gemara says, no. Da'aminan hakamash malan, I'm sorry, hainu hach da'aminan, isn't that what we've been saying? So hakamash malan, shinu dishanin and shinu yehu, velo tema tanaihi. So the Gemara says, look, it is true that it seems to work out, it seems to coordinate, but you also have to add the entirety of yesterday's daf. So the Gemara's, what Ravashi is pointing out, is that the entire of yesterday's daf is in fact validated. All the back and forth, and the answers that we gave, they all are correct, they all work out. And so therefore, the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, vis-a-vis the margin of error regarding the witnesses, regarding testimony, so that is going to coordinate with our Mishnah over here regarding the amount of hours of Chachamim added in order to provide a cushion so that people will not come to eat chametz after chatzos. Am Rav Shimi bar Ashi lo shanu ela b'sha'as, ela b'sha'os. Aval echad omer kodem ha'netzach chama ve'echad omer achar ha'netzach chama, edusim b'teila. So I already foreshadowed this point. Rav Shimi bar Ashi says, let's say one witness says that the crime occurred immediately prior to sunrise, and the other witness says immediately after sunrise, you throw the testimony out, even though what's separating the two testimonies may be just a couple of minutes, it doesn't matter. That's something which is clearly empirical. So Pshita, the Gemara says, now, it is a bit of a chiddush, but the Gemara says it's not much of a chiddush, it's really obvious. So Ela echad omer kodem ha'netzachama ve'echad omer besoch ha'netzachama idusim betela. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, here we'll ramp up the chiddush. And that is that one witness says that the event occurred before sunrise. And the other one says, it was during sunrise, I'm even ready to throw that testimony out. So Hanami Pshita, the Gemara says, isn't that also obvious? The Gemara says, no. Ma'od detema, tarvayu chad de milsa kamrei. No. The truth of the matter is that maybe we could argue they really are saying the same thing. Besoch ha'netz, and v'had de kamrei besoch ha'netz, we're on the top of Yud-Gimel Amud Aleph. And to the one position who said that it was during sunrise, so maybe b'gilui havakai, maybe he just happens to have been at a very clear vantage point, v'zaharui ba'amahu dechazi, and it looked to him as if there were actually rays that were coming. So the kamash malan. And so the chiddush is no. If one said before sunrise and then the other said during sunrise, so even that doesn't coordinate. We're going to throw that testimony out. That's the chiddush of Rav Shimi bar Ashi. Okay. With all that stated, what we are going to do now is basically take us through the Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, which is going to go over the halacha. Meaning we're about to go through now what exactly is the Psak halacha regarding Erev Pesach. Gemara starts off, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Halacha Ki Rav Yehuda. So of the two shitas that we saw in our mission yesterday's daf, actually it's 2 days ago, so the halacha follows like Rav Yehuda, meaning Rav Yehuda has a larger cushion in terms of when to stop eating chametz, an earlier time. And he says that you stop eating chametz already at the fourth hour. So you can eat ochlin kol arba, you eat during the fourth hour, and then during the fifth hour, we're in a point of limbo. We do not eat the chametz, nor do we burn the chametz. We're allowed to get benefit of the chametz during that point in time. And then at the beginning of the sixth hour, so then we are going to be burning our chametz. If we could translate that into times that we're used to saying. So that means to say the fourth hour is from 9 to 10. So from 9 to 10, so you're allowed to eat chametz according to Rabbi Yehuda. From 10 to 11, that's the fifth hour. So it's that chametz is in a period of suspension. And then the beginning of the sixth hour, meaning 11 a.m., so that's when you burn the chametz. Obviously, right, it goes without saying, but I'll say it, that being that I'm only giving an illustration of a perfect day, and obviously Erev Pesach, it's not going to be a perfect day. Happens to be it's pretty close to the equinox, but it's not going to be a perfect day. So obviously the times do adjust because we are working with whatever sunrise is and whatever sunset is. And on top of that, just to make things a little bit more complicated, there is a machlokus in terms of when exactly to gauge when the day begins and when the day ends. So I'm really oversimplifying something which can be and is a little bit more complicated. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara says halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So Amalei Rav Rav Nachman v'neima mar halacha k'Rav Meir d'sasam tana kavasei. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, I don't understand. Why don't we say the halacha is like Rav Meir? Because as we're going to be seeing later on, there is an anonymous mission that seems to be going like Rabbi Meir. And we generally say that we have an anonymous mission, the halacha falls like the anonymous Mishnah. Interesting that normally that position is attributed to Rav Yochanan, but the Gemara over here is suggesting that according to Rav, he also subscribed to this idea. Did not we learn the following Mishnah? Kol shashemot alecho machel, the hour in which you're allowed to eat, so machel, you can also feed it to your animals as well. Now, that can't be the position of Rav Yehuda, because Rav Yehuda says that there's going to be an hour where you can't eat, but at the very same time, you are allowed to feed it to your animals, meaning that fifth hour, that hour of limbo according to Rav Yehuda. So you're not allowed to eat the chametz, but you are allowed to benefit from the chametz. This Mishnah, which comes up later in the Masechta, and Daf Chaf Aleph, so this Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda. Okay, so if it's not going like Rav Yehuda, ergo, it's going like Rabbi Meir. It's a Stam Mishnah. So why don't we say the halacha falls like Rabbi Meir? So Hayi Lav Stam Ahi Mishum Dekasha Mutter. So we're going to see this later when we get to that Mishnah on Chaf Aleph, and that is that the Gemara is bothered by that Mishnah. If you look at that Mishnah, you don't have to turn the page, you can just look up a couple lines. Kol sha'ashem mutter lecho machel. That word mutter is really extraneous, meaning let the Mishnah say kol sha'echol sha'ochel machel. What does it mean shemutter lecho? That's an extraneous word. And we're going to see the Gemara later on explain that that Mishnah is not going like Reb Meir. Who's the Mishnah going like? It's going like Rabbi Gamliel. What? How did that happen? So what the Gemara later on is going to explain is that this is proper pshat in that Mishnah. That at the hour where others are allowed to eat, the others is a reference to Kohanim, and the chametz that they're allowed to eat is Truma, and the hour in which we're describing is the fifth hour, when the Kohanim are allowed to eat their Truma, meaning the fifth hour, that's when you could feed it to your animal. Oh, so that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Gamliel, it's not going like Rabbi Meir. We've lost our entire argument. Meaning we were saying that a Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, that Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, so the Gemara says, good. I have a wonderful follow-up question. Why don't we say the halacha falls like Rabbi Gamliel? He is a compromised position. Doesn't his position lie somewhere in between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda? And generally speaking, when you have a compromised position, so with the halacha inclines towards the compromised position. So the Gemara says, no, he's not a compromised position over here. Okay, now, Rashi understands it in the following manner. When do we say that a position is a compromised position? That's when you have two opinions that are obviously in disagreement with one another, but the two opinions are acknowledging that there are two different factors, and then you have a third opinion that says that in one of the factors, I'm going to side like this, and the other factor, I'm going to side like the other opinion. That's a compromised position. But if the two first opinions are not making any distinction between the factors, meaning, in our case over here, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So they're arguing whether you can eat chametz during the fifth hour. They're not introducing truma as part of the equation or part of the discussion. Rabbi Gamliel says, well, if it comes to truma, then you can eat it during the fifth hour. The Kohanim can eat it. And if it's not truma, then you can't eat during the fifth hour. But that's not a compromised position because Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda never uttered the word truma. So therefore, it's not a compromised position. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Gamliel over here does not exist as a compromised position. Interesting, by the way, that the Gemara does not note that we explain the Mishnah upcoming on Chaf Aleph as a Stam Mishnah that goes like Rabbi Gamliel. Why don't we use that as an argument to say the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel? The Gemara doesn't ask that question. D'tanya. The Gemara suggests that Rav goes like the following Tana of the following Braisa. Okay. So, I'm sorry, before we continue, so where do we stand right now in the Gemara? So Rav Pasan's like Rav Yehuda. That we know for sure. And Rav Yehuda says that you can eat chametz during the fourth hour, but then that's it. You can't eat chametz after the fourth hour, which means 10 a.m., you have to stop eating chametz. So and Rav says that's in fact the halacha. The Gemara now is going to be quoting another Braisa that seems to corroborate this very viewpoint. We learned in a Braisa, D'tanya Arba, Asar Shechalios B'Shabbos, when you have the 14th day of Nisan coming out on a Shabbos. Okay, Yirtz Hashem, this upcoming year. So we are going to be having the 14th day of Nisan come up on a Shabbos. So this year is going to be Erev Pesach, Shechalios B'Shabbos, and that's exactly what the Braisa here is describing. The Braisa says, Mevarin Esa Kol Melofnei HaShabbos. So when do you do Bir Chametz? You can't do Bir Chametz on Shabbos, so you're going to be doing it before Shabbos. Visorfin, and here's what you're going to be burning before Shabbos: trumos, tomatoes. If the trumos tummy, you're going to be burning it. But moreover, teluyos, even if it's a suffek of tuma, you're still going to burn the truma, the chametz truma prior to Shabbos. Utahoros, and even if the truma is truma tahora, you're going to burn it before Shabbos. Now, that is an uncomfortable position because, as we've discussed time and again, when it comes to truma. So in addition to there being the general Baal Tashchis issue, but by Truma there is a mitzvah of being Shomer, of safeguarding the Truma. And the idea over here now that we're burning the Truma, and we're burning it early, meaning it's not the 14th day of Nisan, it's the 13th day of Nisan. You have ample time for Kohanim to eat it. On the other hand, the tension over here is that once we get to tomorrow, and once we get to Erev Pesach, at Chatzot it's going to be Aser, you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to own it. So the tension in this price is, what am I going to do with my truma? So for the truma teme and truma teluya, so fine. So you're going to burn it before Shabbos. But even the truma tahora, okay. So the Tanakhama says you're going to burn it before Shabbos. Umishayin menataros mazman shtei sudas kedei lechol ad dalad shalos divrei Rebbe Elazar ben Yehuda ish bartusa she'amar mishum Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yehoshua. And then what you're going to do is you're going to leave yourselves over 2 meals worth of Trumas Chametz so that you can have 2 meals on Shabbos. And so is the opinion that is said over in the name of Rabbi Yehoshua. Amrulo, they say to him, Taharos lo yisrafu sham yimsu lem ochlin. How can you burn Truma Tahora prior to Shabbos? You're going to find consumers. There are going to be other Kohanim, they're going to eat it. Amr lahem, kvar bikshu v'lo matzu. What do you mean you're going to find Kohanim? A Kohanim are just going to appear? Right? In other words, it's Shabbos. And Kohanim are going to travel into town on Shabbos? That's not going to happen. Meaning we know how many Kohanim are in town. We know how much of the Truma can be consumed over Shabbos. So Rabbi Yeshua's response is, no. You're not going to just simply leave it over for Shabbos. We know that there are no Kohanim that are going to come and eat it. Amrulo, they say back to him, Shemechutz l'chom alanu. So what do you mean? Maybe the Kohanim right before Shabbos, so they were right outside the wall, meaning They were within Tchum Shabbos, and you don't know about it, maybe they're going to come in. So obviously over here, they're debating which is the riskier play. Is the riskier play to burn the chametz, the Trumas chametz, perhaps needlessly too early? Or is the riskier play letting it sit and bringing it into Shabbos with us, but at the same time not finding a consumer, and now left with chametz going into Pesach. Okay. So Amar lahem l'divreichem aftluyos lo yisrafu shem yavo aliyah v'tarein. We continue with the back and forth over here. So they say to Rabbi Yeshua says back to them, well, if you're not ready to burn the taharos, well, don't burn the suffik as well, because you never know, Eliyahu may come and he may declare to be tahar. Amar lo kvar muftach lahem l'Yisrael she'in Eliyahu ba lo ba'arvi shabasos. So we saw this back in Erevin, and we get to review over here in Pesachim. Eliyahu is not coming not on an Erev Shabbos and not on a Erev Yontav in order to herald the arrival of Mashiach. The people are too busy. I know it almost sounds comical, but the Gemara says it with a straight face. People are preparing for Shabbos, and so therefore Eliyahu comes. It's going to distract us from our Shabbos and Yontav preparation. He's not coming on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontav. We have nothing to be concerned about that on that particular Erev Shabbos, Eliyahu is going to be coming. Amr lo zaz mishamar shekava halacha ke Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda ish partus shamar mishum Rabbi Yehoshua. And they didn't budge from there until they established the halacha to be like Rabbi Yoshua, which is when the Shabbos falls out in Erev Pesach and you have the truma, you burn all the truma with exception to two meals worth, which you're going to bring with you into Shabbos and you're going to eat during Shabbos. Now, there are a couple points over here, but let's just right now stay on the main point of the Gemara, which is what is this position over here? Is that you are going to be eating, you're going to be bringing only two meals of Trumas Chametz into Shabbos, and you have to finish it by the fourth hour. And they said the halacha follows like Rabbi Yoshua. So my love, afilu lechol. Now, which aspects of the position of Rabbi Yoshua are we establishing the halacha to follow? So presumably every point that he made, meaning the point that you're going to be burning almost all the Trumas Chametz before Shabbos, and also, in terms of the deadline, in terms of when it can be eaten, it can only be eaten up to the fourth hour of the day, but you can't eat it beyond that point in time. And this accords with the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Isn't that what we're saying? Aren't we saying all of that? So Amar Papa Mishmei Derava Lo Leva'er. No, we're not saying that. The only position that we are accepting over here as halacha is the idea that you have to be burning the majority of the truma prior to Shabbos. It's that point that we're looking to accentuate and to highlight. Okay, you'll notice over here, and this is obviously a point of interest, of significant interest, and it's going to be playing a halachic role this year on Erev Pesach, when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbos. So in the Braisa, it's recorded that when you have truma, so you're going to be bringing only two meals worth of the truma into Shabbos. Now, of course, there's a mitzvah on Shabbos to have three meals. We discussed this back on Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Tes, if I remember correctly. So there's a mitzvah to have Gimel Seudos on Shabbos. That's the one of the bonuses, the benefits of Shabbos. So over here, what do you do when Erev Pesach falls down on Shabbos? The problem, of course, is that to have a third meal in the afternoon, so it can't be made up of chametz. Chametz is asur min haTorah. And to have a third meal in the morning, well, the morning you're in your second meal. Okay, and there is a lot of discussion in terms of what exactly to do. However, the Gemara over here on Pesachim Yud Gimel seems to have what is a really simple solution, and that is simply cut out a meal. Rashi writes it very clearly. Rashi writes right alongside where we are in the Gemara, Mazon Shtei Seudos, Velo Shalosh, not three meals. Dechol Shalosh Seudos to Shabbos, Arvi Shachris Umincha, because the three meals that you have on Shabbos are the evening meal, the morning meal, and the afternoon meal. Ve'erev Pesach Aser Lechol, Mina mincha ulamala, and Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to eat mina mincha ulamala. That's going to be our introduction to the 10th parak of Pesachim. So Rashi just simply says, okay, so cut out the meal of Shalosh Seudos. Now, in terms of the halacha, so you're going to be, we're all going to be guided by our poskim in terms of what to do. But in terms of Rashi on today's daf, so Rashi says there's just simply no third meal. Good. So anyway, so that obviously plays into what we are going to be experiencing this very year, Nirtza Hashem. Now, continuing in the Gemara. So far, our discussion has been revolving around, since we started Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, one singular point, and that is who does the halacha follow like? So we have B'Shem Rav, that the halacha follows like Rav Yehuda. Continuing in the Gemara, the Af Rebbe Savar Lahadar Rav Nachman. Rebbe also agrees with Rav Nachman. I know historically that's a little bit strange. Rebbe came before Rav Nachman, but in other words, Rebbe also sides with the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda. How do I know that Damer Ravin Bar Arda Maisa Bar Adam Echad Sheifkid Diska Malei Chametz Eitzel Yochanan Chaku Ka'a? What happened was is that there was an episode where a sack, right? It's a sack that goes over the animal. It's called the Diska, Diskaya. It actually is it's a double sack, right? The Diskaya probably comes from the word duo, probably. Anyway, it's a double sack that goes over the animal, and it was filled with chametz, and it was deposited by Yochanan Chakuka'a, meaning he's basically serving a shomer over this bag of chametz. Vinach buach barim, and now rats got into the bag, via chametz mevatzveitz v'yotzei, and now the chametz was leaking out of the bag. Uvalifne Rebbe, and now he's going over to Rebbe, and it's already Erev Pesach, and he's asking Rebbe, what do I do? And it's a dilemma. Meaning the chametz, he was asked to safeguard it. It's now Erev Pesach. We're moving towards Chatzos. And are you supposed to burn it? And on top of that also, we're losing it because it's coming out of the bag because of the hole that was made by the rats. So, Shah Rishon Amar Lo Hamtein. first hour of the morning. So Rebbe said, wait. Shiyam Amar Lo Hamtein, same with the second. Shlishis Amar Lo Hamtein, same with the third. Revius Amar Lo Hamtein. And now the fourth hour, Rebbe says, hold. Let's not do anything yet. Chamishis. And when you got to the fifth hour of the morning on Erev Pesach, so Amar Leit Se Umachra B'Shuk. So Rebbe says, okay, now go ahead and sell it. So my love, Lin Achrim Ke Rebbe Yehuda. Now, who are you selling it to during this fifth hour? So if we subscribe to Rebbe Yehuda, that means he's selling it to non-Jews. And so, good. So isn't this now a proof that Rebbe subscribes to the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda? So I'm Rav Yosef, lo li Yisrael, ke Rebbe Meir. So Rav Yosef says, no, I have a different suggestion. And that is, he sold it to another Jew because he subscribes to Shita's Rebbe Meir, that Rebbe Meir allows you to eat it during the fifth hour. So Amalei Abai Ili Yisrael Nishkal El Nafshei. So Abai says, well, that's a strange solution. If he's selling it to another Jew, why doesn't he just simply sell it to himself? So the Gemara says, no, Mishum Chashada. No, selling it to yourself, that's really suspicious. The Tanya, the Mishnah, Gabbai Tzedakah She'ein Lahem Aniyim L'Chalek. So let's say the Gabbai Tzedakah doesn't have any poor people in order to allocate the bread. He's running a soup kitchen, and now there's no poor people there. And what are you going to do? You leave the food around, the food's going to spoil. So obviously what you want to do is you want to convert it to money. And then, at a later point in time, go ahead and buy fresh food for the Aniyim. So portin lachem, main portin latzman. So sell the food to other people, do not sell it to yourself. And the same thing that's for the gabbai who's in charge of the tamchui, sell it to others, don't sell it to yourself. We know that you have to be totally squeaky clean. You have to be above suspicion. Meaning even if you sold it to yourself, and even if you sold it to yourself for fair price, nevertheless it looks suspicious, and you have to be just simply above and beyond any suspicion. So over here, as far as the Shomer is concerned, so for him to sell the chametz himself, that just looks too suspicious. So Amalei Rav Adar Bar Masel and Rav Yosef Befer Shamar Lan. So Rav Adar Bar Masel says to Rav Yosef, look, it's very nice the way you're explaining the Braisa, that maybe you're selling it to another Jew, and we understand that you're selling it to another Jew, not to yourself, because of Chshad. But Rav Yosef, let me remind you. And in Erevin, we cover this many times. And here in Pesachim now, so we're covering this as well. Rav Yosef forgot a lot of his learning, and therefore had to have been reminded what he himself taught. And now Rav Adar Bar Masel says to Rav Yosef, I'm going to remind you what you taught us. That in that episode that we are describing right now, that it was the fifth hour, and now Rebbe says to the Shomer, right, the Rav Yochanan, what was his name? So, it was Yochanan Chakuka'a. So the and by the way, it's the second time in the Masechta that we've encountered him. But anyway, so what Rebbe's instructions were is that during the fifth hour, sell to a non-Jew. That was the instructions that were given by Rebbe to the Shomer. So in other words, he passes like Rav Yosef. So I'm Rav Yosef Kaman Azla Hashmaita de Rebbe Ke Rebbe Shimon Gamliel Ditnan. Now the Gemara over here is going to have one end note to this discussion that we just encountered. Meaning you're a Shomer and you're watching food, and now you don't know where the owner is. Right? The owner said he was going to return, he didn't return, and now obviously, there is going to be a diminishment of the food. The value, there's going to be a devaluation of the food because food is a perishable. What do you do now when you're a shomer of food and you don't know when the owner is coming back? So this issue is discussed in Bava Metzia. Of course, it's discussed in Bava Metzia. That's where we discuss all the halachas of shomer. So over there, a Mishnah. The Mishnah reads, "Didnan hamafkid peres etzel chavera afilo hein avudim lo yiga behem." So according to the Tanakhama, so you were asked to watch perishables, and perishables do what perishables do, and that is they are lost. So the halacha is, according to the Tanakhama, look, the shomer didn't tell you when he was coming back, so you'll just simply continue to watch them. They're going to lose their value, okay, but you don't have to do anything. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar Mochrem BeBeisim Imnei Hashavas Aveda. Rav Shimon Gamliel says no, sell them in Beisim because of Hashavas Aveda. Meaning, look, why don't you save value? So sell them with Beis Din, meaning to make sure that it's done kedasa kedin, and to make sure that there was fair value, and to make sure that you're not going to be You're not going to be looking at a lawsuit afterwards. So sell with Beis Din because you're going to be fulfilling the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So Amalei Abaye. So I'm sorry. So before we get on to the Gemara's comments, so what we're saying over here is that the idea that Rebbe allowed the chametz to be sold on Erev Pesach during the fifth hour to non-Jews, so that seemingly is necessarily signing with the opinion of Rashi and Gamliel. So Amalei Abaye V'Lavit Marlam Rabba Barbachanam Rav Yochanan. So Abaye says no. You don't have to take Rebbe's position over here and pigeonhole it and shoehorn it into the opinion of Shimon Gamliel. That's not necessary, because over here, remember what Rav Yochanan taught us? What did Rav Yochanan teach us? And that is, Lo shanu ela bichdei chesronam. No, that's only if the depreciation of the devaluation is going at a normal rate, meaning it's perishing at a rate that we normally suspect it to. Ava yosr michdei chesronam mochrim beveisin. But if it is going to perish at an accelerated rate, now there's no better example like Erev Pesach, where it's going to diminish in value at a super accelerated rate, meaning that what's going to happen after the fifth hour, it's going to have a value, a monetary value of zero. So over here, it's going to be depreciating at an unbelievably accelerated rate. So over here, even the Chachamim would agree to Rav Shimon Gamliel that what the Shomer's responsibility is to do now is to sell it and recoup any value that he could. Okay. We're on Yud Yom Amud Beis, and we are going to be covering one topic on the Amud Beis, and that is, remember the way that they would broadcast the information in the Beis HaMikdash to all those that were assembled in Yerushalayim in terms of which hour of the morning it was. Remember, according to Rav Yehuda, fourth hour from 9 to 10, you can eat chametz. Fifth hour from 10 to 11, we have to leave it in a state of suspension. Sixth hour, the beginning of the sixth hour, mitzvah to burn it. So, Rav Yehuda says that in the Beis HaMikdash, here's what happened. Rav Yehuda, by the way, parenthetically, as a historical note, lived after Churban Beis HaMikdash. He was a late Tana, and so probably what he's telling us over here is what was reported to him. Okay, presumably. Anyway, Rav Yehuda says that in the Beis HaMikdash there were two lachmei toda that were placed on some sort of column. And while the two of them were on top of it and everyone saw them, so that means that you were allowed to eat the chametz. One was taken off. We know that we're in that hour of suspension. We're in the fifth hour. When both are taken off, we know now it's time to burn the chametz. Okay. Now, obviously, the lachmei toda are excellent representation because they are chametz. Of the menachos that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash, they are almost all matzah, with notable exception, two notable exceptions. One, the shtei lechem that's brought on Shavuos, and two, the lechem that it's accompanied with a carbon toda. With a carbon toda, there are 40 loaves of bread, 30 of them are matzah, 10 of them are chametz. Anyway, good. That is all as per the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so the Gemara is going to now comment on the lachmei toda, and that will be the entirety of the Amud Beis of today's daf. V'od amar Rav Yehuda shtei chalos tani tana kama de Rav Yehuda al gav ha'itzaba. So when a tana was teaching over the Mishnah in front of Rav Yehuda, so the word that he used was al gav ha'itzaba, literally on the back of the column, on the back of the bench. Amar le v'chila hatznianu tzarich. So Rav Yehuda was critical of that reading of the Mishnah. What are you doing? You're putting on the back of the bench. You're hiding it behind the bench. The whole point of these loaves was to broadcast information to the public. Therefore, tani al gag ha'itzba. So the proper nusach of the Mishnah is that it belongs on the gag ha'itzba. Put it on the rooftop. Amar Rachva, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Stav, Kafel Haya. The Gemara shares this information with us a couple times on Shas. And a picture over here is worth 1,000 words. I don't have a picture, and my words are going to be really limited. So, as far as the Harabais is concerned, so it was a double colonnade. Tanya Namihachi, the Bryce over here, Harabais Tav Kafel Haya. So it was a double colonnade. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Istav Nis Haisa. So it looked like an Istav Nis, some form of a colonnade. Nikre Stav Lifnim Istav. It was one interior and one exterior. Okay. As far as exactly what it looked like, so if you have a picture, that's great. I'm going to move on in the Gemara. Psulos. Now, the Gemara is going to comment on the fact that these lachmei toda were pasul. They were disqualified. Well, why were they disqualified? What's going on over here? So that's Gemara's. That is what the Gemara is going to explain from here until the remaining part of today's daf. The Gemara starts off. Amai psulos. Why were these lachmei Torah pasul? So Amar Rabbi Chanina mitoch she hayom merubos nifsulos belina. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why they're pasul, because they become disqualified through lina. Meaning, here's what happened. When was the carbon Torah brought? It was not brought on the 14th day of Nisan. In fact, they were not brought on the 14th day of Nisan, because you know what's going to happen when you bring a carbon Torah on the 14th day of Nisan? You're going to reduce and significantly limit the time that you're able to eat the carbon Torah. As we already went over, the carbon Torah is made up of an animal, right, the actual carbon itself, and the accompanying loaves of bread. 30 of them are matzah, 10 of them are chametz. What is the duration? How much time do we have to eat a carbon Torah? So even though it's a carbon shlamim, you have only but one day and the following night. Okay, now, because it's Erev Pesach, so how much time do I have to eat the loaves, the 10 loaves of chametz? You only have the morning, once the afternoon rolls around, so now it is Aser Min HaTorah to eat it. So you have significantly limited the amount of time that you eat the carbon Torah, therefore, you don't bring the carbon Torah on Erev Pesach. When were these carbon Torahs brought? On the 13th day of Nisan. And because there were so many carbon Torahs that were brought on the 13th day of Nisan, there was leftover loaves. Now, what are we done with these leftover loaves? Well, at least for two of them, for most of them, they're just simply going to be burnt and destroyed, right? That's called Nosar. But for two of them, we're going to be using them as our public broadcast system. D'tanya, we learned in a braisa, back to the Gemara, Ein mivin toda b'chag hamatzos, mimnei chametz sheba. You don't bring a carbon Torah on Pesach. The Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that obvious? So Amar Avada b'Reb Yudah ha'cha b'Yudah la'askinan. No, what we mean is on the 14th day of Nisan. I know I already explained this, but it's only because I knew the Gemara coming up. It's the 14th day of Nisan, because Savra in Mavin Kashal Mabesa Psul. What you can't do is that you can't bring a carbon knowing that you're going to be reducing the amount of time that it can be eaten. V'kuli Amma b'Shlosha Asar Maisi. Everyone's bringing on the 13th. And Maisi Lahu Omitoch Shehen Merubos Nifsals Belina. And there's just simply not enough consumers to eat all that carbon Torah. And so therefore there is by default going to be leftover lachmei Torah. And so for two of them, we're now going to be using that as our PA system. So that is all approach number one in terms of what are we doing with lachmei Torah on Erev Pesach. Approach number two of the Gemara, there's going to be a total of three approaches. Approach number two over here, and approach number two, admittedly, is a little bit complicated. Mishum Rabbi Yane Amr Ksherasayu. Really, these loaves of bread are kosher. Why are they described as being pasul? Shelo nishchar aleihem hazevach. Because it happens to be that what happened is that for these loaves of the carbon Torah, so they weren't, the animal itself wasn't shechted. Okay, now this brings us to a kashim point, and Rashi here does spend a significant amount of time going over it. Obviously, it's critical to understand a Gemara. I will say it over super succinctly. And whatever. I'm going to sacrifice clarity over here just to be brief. I apologize. But the idea is that the carbon Torah is the actual animal itself serves as a matir for the loaves, which means to say that when you shech the carbon, it's with the shechting of the carbon that is going to imbue the loaves with the kedushas haguf. And so therefore, these loaves over here did not have its animal being shechted, and so therefore these loaves over here are not allowed to be eaten because they were not yet imbued with the kedushas haguf. So the Gemara starts off with a really simple question, v'nishchot. Okay, so you know what? The animal itself wasn't shechted. I got this wonderful idea, and that is, why don't you shech the animal? Sha'avar ha-zevach. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a case where you lost the animal. Now, v'naisi zevach acher v'nishchot. Okay, so bring another animal. So the amar zu, todav zu lachma. So the Gemara says, no, you can't bring another animal, right? I know everything's replaceable, but in this case, it's not replaceable. U'kedarav da'amar rabba avar alecha mevi lechem acher. Because here's the story. If you lost the bread of the carbon Torah, so that's replaceable, you just bring other bread. But av da Torah, in mevi Torah acheres. But if you lost the actual carbon itself, so you can't bring another carbon Torah. My time alechem galal Torah, v'in Torah galal lechem. Because looking at the relationship between the carbon and the bread, so the bread is ancillary to the carbon, but not the opposite way. And so that means to say that if you have the main, the keva, which is the actual carbon itself, and you lost the bread, so fine, that's simply replaceable. But if you lost the carbon itself, So you can't just simply replace it with another carbon and reattach the bread from the original carbon to the replacing carbon. It simply doesn't work. So the Gemara says, okay, but for our loaves of bread now that is missing its carbon. So look, it doesn't have Kedusha Seguf. So if it doesn't have Kedusha Seguf yet, so I have this other wonderful idea, and that is Bipode. If it only has Kedusha Damim and not Kedusha Seguf, so it's redeemable. So the Gemara says, Ela la'olam shenishchar aleim azevach v'nishbach adam. So the Gemara says, okay, so the case under discussion over here is where I did have the carbon, I did shech the carbon, but then what happened is that the blood spilled, and we were not able to be zorig the blood on the mizbeach. Uchman kirebi, and on top of that, we're also going to have to add on to this, Shita's Rebbe. What is Shita's Rebbe? Da'amar Rebbe, shnei dvarim, ha-matirim malim zeh b'lo zeh. That when you have two things which are serving as a matir, so there are each one of them in of themselves are going to be effective in order to give the bread kedusha saguf. So detanya will learn from brisa kivsei aseres. So here we're now talking about another example where you have this relationship between the carbon and its accompanying bread, notably the shtei alechem, which also, by the way, happens to be the other carbon of the year that its mincha is in fact chametz. But anyway, so ein mekachem es alechem ela b'shchita. So how is the shechting of the kivsei atzeres, right, the two sheep that are offered in shvuos, how are they going to imbue the bread with kedushas aguf? So they're going to imbue it by successfully shechting and offering the blood of the kivsei atzeres, ketzad. So let's put this into practice. How's that going to look? So shechtan lishman v'zarachtam lishman kiddush alechem. If I shechted and sprinkled the blood lishman, meaning correctly, so then good. Now the bread is going to be imbued with kedushas aguf. Shachtan shalol lishman v'zarach dam and shalol lishman. If let's say the shechita or the zrika was done shalol lishman, lo kiddush alechem. So then the bread is not going to be imbued with kedushas aguf. Shachtan lishman v'zarach dam and shalol lishman. So let's say you shecht lishma, shechita was done correctly, the zrika was done shalol lishman incorrectly. Lechem kadosh v'ne kadosh divrei Rebbe. So now according to Rebbe, so the lechem has kedusha but does not have kedusha, meaning that it's now in some sort of in between state of having kedusha saguf, but not to the point where you can eat it, but enough so that it is no longer redeemable. And Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, La'olam, Enu Kadosh Alechem, Ashishcha Lishman, V'Yizrok Dam Lishman. And according to the sheet of Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, the bread is not going to be imbued with Kedusha Saguf until both the Shechita and the Zrika are both done Lishman. What comes out over here is that, and in terms of explaining our Mishnah, what is the Lech Metoda doing over here? So now it becomes a really difficult scenario. I say difficult meaning that it's not only difficult to understand, but just even difficult to get to this point where the bread now finds itself on Erev Pesach to have a quasi-kedusha. Not enough that it can be eaten, but enough that it can't be redeemed. How do we get to this point? Because the carbon of the Lach Metoda was shechted, but the Zrika was done Shelo Lishman, and therefore the bread now is going to be imbued with a quasi kedusha saguf, and that's why it's not redeemable. So now what do I do with this bread that I can't eat it? So basically now I'm going to be using it as my broadcast system to tell the public what time in the morning it is. Now, Afilu Tamer Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, and we're almost done with this section of the Gemara, which admittedly is a complex section. And the Gemara says that, look, over here, I can even say that this whole situation is following the sheet of Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon. That what happened is that you shechted the carbon toda lishman, you collected the blood in a kos, and then it was spilled. Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, Savala Kavua. Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, we're going to line him up just like his father. That anything that stands to be sprinkled, meaning it's in the kos being ready to be sprinkled, halacha will view it as if it's already sprinkled. This is omeid lizro kizorik dummy. Good. So with all that stated, that was all now our second approach, which is, what is the Lach Metoda doing on Erev Pesach? And why aren't we eating the Lach Metoda? So it comes into a situation where we had its carbon, we shechted its carbon, the Zrik was done Shelo Lishman, imbuing the Lach Metoda with a quasi-kedusha seguf. Not enough so that we can eat it, but enough that it's no longer redeemable. Now, the difficulty with this entire approach, honestly, is that Rabbi Yehuda was describing what was an annual event, seemingly an annual event. And the idea over here that we're going to arrive at this particular scenario annually, that it's really difficult. Okay, we'll leave it right now as that. We are now up to our third and final approach as we are concluding the daf. Tanam Yishum Rebbe Lazar Amru. So here we have a braisa, and that is kisher asayu. So these lachmei Torah were kasher. And obviously this is not working with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah over here, when Rabbi Yehuda reports the scenario, so he reports the lachmei Torah being psulos, here in the braisa, ksheros. So again, while they were there, so everyone knows it's still okay to eat your chametz. Nitlach as mehem, if one of them are taken away, tolin lo ochlim velo sarfin. So when one is taken away, now again, this is shitas Rabbi Yehuda, which means that it was taken away at the beginning of the fifth hour. Right, at 10 a.m. on a perfect day, so one loaf was taken off. So now everybody knows we are now in this hour of suspension. We don't eat it, but we don't burn it yet. Now when both loaves are taken away, so then everyone knows at that point in time, it's time to burn. Tanya Abishal Omer, and over here, just one more addendum, and that is a braisa of Abishal, state parus hayuch korshos behar hamishcha. On Har Azesam, on the Mount Olives, so they would have two cows that were plowing. So kozman shishteim chorshos. So when they were plowing, kolam ochlin. So then everybody would eat. Note los achas mem. When one cow was removed, so that leaves only one cow plowing. Tolim lo ochlin lo sorfin nit lushteim hitchilu kolam sorfin. So basically, it was the same method of communication, but instead of the Har Abaisis, is now talking about Har Mishcha, Har Zesim, the Mount Olives. And on top of that, instead of the loaves, we're talking over here about animals that are plowing. And yes, by the way, it does speak to what we're going to be talking about in the fourth parak of Pesachim in terms of whether or not you're allowed to do malacha on Erev Pesach, and it's a function of minhagim. And over here, it seems like the minhag in Yerushalayim was that they did do malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach. Tosfos makes this observation right over here, citing Yerushalmi. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. We finished off today our discussion from yesterday regarding the reason why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to stop eating chametz already 2 hours prior to midday. Again, this ties into the discussion regarding the margin of error that people have regarding the ability to tell time. So there's a two-hour buffer for Rabbi Yehuda in that you're not allowed to eat chametz neither during the fifth hour nor during the sixth hour, meaning from 10 to 11 and from 11 to 12. And the Gemara wants to know, why should that be? So what Rabbi Yehuda was concerned about was Yom HaMe'unan, a cloudy day. Although, honestly, that was one of three different approaches. But I'm going over the last approach that we saw this morning. So because of a cloudy day, so if we're worried about a cloudy day, so why not have even an earlier stop point of eating chametz? So the Gemara says, because mealtime is the fourth hour of the day, everybody's eating a meal during the fourth hour of the day from 9 to 10. That was the accustomed breakfast. And so therefore, everybody knows that. And so therefore, even on a cloudy day, people know when the fourth hour exists. Good. With all that stated, the Gemara just made a couple more notes regarding witnesses testifying, one before sunrise, one after sunrise. Okay. Then, on your Gimel Amud Aleph, one topic of discussion, and that is, who does the halacha follow like? The Gemara's conclusion, the halacha follows like Rabbi Yehuda. And in fact, the halacha follows like Rabbi Yehuda. Good. On the Amud Beis, I know that was a really quick summary of the Amud Aleph, but good. On the Amud Beis today, so we also dealt with basically one topic, and that is, what are you going to be doing? Why is our Lachmei Todah, which is serving to inform the public about what hour of the morning it is, what are these disqualified Lachmei Todah doing here in the Beis HaMikdash? And to that, we basically had three approaches on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Approach number one is that they were the ones that were offered on the 13th. Nobody would be offering a toad on the 14th because you would be curtailing the amount of time that the lechem itself could be eaten. So nobody would be offering on the 14th. Everyone's offering their lachmei todah on the 13th. So many carbon todahs and the lachmei todah offered on the 13th. Just simply there's going to be leftover. Two of those are going to be used as for public service announcements on the morning of the 14th. That's approach number one. Approach number two is that no, really there was a carbon todah and lachmei todah offered on the 14th. And the reason why they're disqualified is because of a whole bunch of kachim halachas that are technical, obviously important, that gets us to the point where these lachmei todah are inedible, but also unredeemable. Okay? And then the third approach is that, which is a brisa, which is that the Lachmei Torah actually were ksheros. And those were the ones that were used on for public service as a PSA. And then the last brisa that we ended off our daf with was a brisa regarding the other method of communication on Har HaMishka, on the Mount of Olives. We conclude with today's daf.